Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, information, stuff to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded approach. It doesn't mean you look at everything and say, you just got to see the good, you got to see the good in everything we do. But the idea is to learn as much as you can about people, how people function. Today I want to talk to you about leadership. Leadership is such an interesting concept. Are you a leader? Would you like to be a leader? Do you consider yourself a leader? You know, in the past, there are scholars who studied leadership. You know, if you can't do, then you do. If you can't do it, then you study it. They studied it. And they thought that charisma, intelligence, and other personality traits were the key to effective leadership. Charisma, you know, that magnetism that people have. Intelligence and other personality traits are the key to effective leadership. Now, accordingly, these same academics thought that good leaders used to have inborn talents to dominate followers and tell them what to do. You know, maybe you'd be the older child. Maybe you'd be the person in the family who told everyone what to do. Maybe it's inborn. Maybe it's in your entire family. I come from a family where everybody's a leader, you know. I have two sisters, and both of them in their own fields are leaders. So maybe it's inborn. Maybe it's genetic. Recently, though, there have been some questions as to what true leadership is and how true leadership works. And some theories suggest that leaders with sufficient character and will can triumph over whatever reality they confront. So in other words, they're saying that there are people that are such good leaders, they're so good that no matter where you put them, they're going to wind up being leaders. This is not true. This is what they used to think, but it's not true. A leader in one situation is not necessarily a leader in another situation. Recently, a new picture of leadership has emerged, one that better accounts for the actual modern leadership performance that we see. So this is what I want to teach you about today. I want to teach you about the leaders that you follow, and the leaders that you may be. Armand DeMille here. Effective leaders, in this new view, work to understand the values and opinions of their followers. The way that they lead is not through absolute authority, which is the old way. You know, the old way where you would have the dictator and people would, out of fear, follow? Well, that's good as long as somebody's watching the shop. You could be a dictator in your job. You could be a boss who frightens everybody. Turn your back and you're going to see your pens are missing. You know, by the way, this Thursday, in the New York Times, in the, what is that section? Style section. I anticipate there's going to be an article about why people steal from their jobs. I think I was quoted extensively in there, but who knows? It may wind up to be one line. So, Thursday's Times, the 23rd or something like that. But in this other view, you know, you have this view that an absolute authority, a total leader, is great. He's your leader. As long as he doesn't turn his back. That's what power leaders do. Power leaders are great as long as they're there. The power leader goes out of town, all hell breaks loose. Right? Things happen, you know, you just don't know. You come back and you say, who made this mess? I thought everything was in place. So this new form of leadership is one where you embody and you almost become one of the people that you lead. And through this form of leadership, you get their acquiescence and you get their acceptance of you as a leader. So this science of empathy, of entering into and being one of the crowd, and then emerging from that crowd as a leader, it's quite a science. And it is the science that was used by George Bush. It's exactly what he did. It's exactly how, why he wears the cowboy shirts. It was exactly how he got to be accepted by the entire country. Yes. Yes. Is he a leader? Well, he was for a good period of time. Now he's kind of unpopular. I mean, just think about his announcement on September 11th. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country, he said. So right away he was joining you. And then Bush promised to hunt down and to find those folks, he called them folks, who committed this act. And in those very words, he joined you by calling them those folks. You see, he wasn't just pointing fingers. He was like, we're going to do this together. We're a posse. And I'll lead the posse, but we're all in it together. So you may have an objection to that kind of leadership, but believe it or not, what we've seen is that kind of leadership is tremendously effective. For whatever you say, I mean, whatever their agenda was, Bush, Cheney, and that entire crowd, for their own personal needs, they were very effective for a good period of time. As much as we hate it, they got exactly what they wanted. How did they get it? How did they get the consensus? How did they get the people to allow them to do it? Well, I don't know. It's a combination of many factors, but it does embody this concept of leadership. And it's the concept of leadership that I embrace the most. I believe that leadership, in true leadership, embraces the understanding of the needs of the people who you lead. Therefore, when I tell you we have a program called the Positive Mind, and that the Positive Mind delivers information about the human mind to you, and we try to get you past your prejudice, past your reactions to even hearing the word Bush, you know, and your prejudices and your counter-prejudices and your war that you're always waging, we try to get you out of that. But, you know, I want you to learn. Part of the way I want you to learn is I present information to you that may be contrary to what you believe in, but then I present the listeners so that you could hear them. When they call in, my friends, you may listen to them and you could do one of two things. You could say, oh, those stupid people, how could they be taking up this time and talking like that? Or you could say, let me learn about this person. Let me understand the way this person experiences the world. And by us being able to present to you a number of people who seem to talk from their heart, seem to talk truth, they seem to tell you what they feel, you can learn about people. And in that way, you can help support people. And in that way, you can help guide people, including your own leadership. Let's go further into it, leadership. So what you need to be able to get an effective dialogue between you and the people you choose to lead. Now this you could see with a mother and her kids. If you're a loving mother and you have two children, you understand the needs of your children. You don't just say, you know, my kids need to run out of the house and not do things and I'm going to keep them strict in the house. You understand why they're restless. You talk to them about it, and as your parental leader that you are, you enter into their field of needs. See, you know if you have a son and a daughter, and your daughter wants to do one thing and your son wants to do another, you recognize their needs. You don't go and say, you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to feel this to either one. An effective parent is a parent who leads the children by understanding the children's needs. And you don't only have to lead your children that way, you could lead your own parents that way. I know someone who went on holiday recently with her mother and her daughter. And she had to use that very skill at getting both her mother and her daughter and herself to get what they needed on this vacation. She had to enter into their fields to see what they liked. And it was quite, you can imagine, it's quite a difference. There's an 80-year-old woman and a 10-year-old girl, you know. And you have to satisfy both these needs if you're going to be an effective leader. And she provided a really great trip. So leadership is being able to enter into the field. I know leaders, you know, in the publishing industry, I know leaders who get in there, and you could barely tell that they are assigned a supervisory position. They look like everybody else. They sound like everybody else. And yet they have the most effective leadership roles. They're effective is what they do. People love to work with them. People love working for them. That's the idea. And it's not only the idea when you have people working for you, but which I think is a great thing, because I think if you're a leader, then you're a teacher. And if you could build a house where people can live and earn money, and if you could do something like have a shop or a business where you can employ people and the people are happy working where you are and they think you treat them fairly and they love you and you love them, that's a wonderful thing, because they're going to contribute to society and to the world out there. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about leadership. Now what happens with certain kinds of leadership is that there's, like, a long time ago, there was a theory that strong leaders were saviors. And if you had the stronger the leader, Teddy Roosevelt, you know, leader. You know, the strong one, the one who's mighty, the one who stands up there and say, we ain't going to take this from nobody, right? The great leaders. But you know what happened after Hitler? Hitler became the ultimate strong leader, and he soured everybody. Everybody was soured by that. They saw what that kind of leadership will do. And that kind of leadership is characterized nowadays as, you know, the Nazi leadership, the Hitler leadership. The kind that's in command and is going to tell you what to do and terrify you with dangerous threats if you don't do exactly what they're saying. And that's one form of leadership. So if you work at a job, we have a boss who scares you. You know, you may make jokes. You may say Zig Heil when he turns his back just as a joke, because you feel like he's commanding you that way. But sure as all hell, if something were to happen where you had to choose between something, a friend of yours and your boss, you would choose your friend. There would be very little loyalty to your boss. So the leadership idea comes from creating, you know, either doing it one way through dominance. There's another way to do it, which is called the social group identity leadership. Now, in this way, what you do is you gather a group of people and you give them a social identity. Like Jets fans. You know, you're all fans of the Jets. And then you get all the Jets fans in one room. And you suddenly have this commonality among them. And then you sell them insurance. You know, insurance for Jets fans. Something like that. And you notice that with credit card applications that you get. They kind of give you this social identity. Social identity is very tempting. It's very tempting for everybody to have a social identity. And one of the things that leaders do very often is they capitalize on a social identity. They push a social identity and they get you to want to be a part of it. That's another form of leadership. We used to think that was very effective too, but it turned out not to be, because people within the social group wound up having values that were different than everybody else, and they wound up fighting about it. So you want to see yourself as a leader. But one of the things that you have to be able to recognize the leader who might be in your group or yourself as a leader is you have to listen and you have to learn. You have to listen to the people who are willing to tell you who they are. What a gift it is to have somebody tell you who they are, to say to you, here's who I am, here's what I believe, here's what I feel. Those are the two questions I have. What do you think and what do you feel? That's what I want to know about you. What do you think and what do you feel? What are your values? What do you believe in? I want to understand you. At the very heart of contemporary thought is that there's this tremendous, profound ambivalence towards all leaders. People are just angry at leaders at this point. They're angry at anybody who is a leader. There's a general dislike for anybody who's in charge. And that's what happens. So a leader has to kind of hide their leadership. And as I said, they enter into the crowd and they lead from within the crowd. is the best form of leadership, because when you do it, when you are one who's just above the crowd, just because you're above the crowd, people resent you. You know, one of the terrible things that we were noticing about people getting these tremendous salaries as the head of corporations? With those salaries, I don't know why they did it that way, because, gee, you may as well give somebody a great house or something when they retire, but giving somebody a $2 million salary at Walmart when they employ people at minimum wage, how do you think your employees feel about you? They hate you. Hate. You're getting $2 million a year. Or if not more. And I'm making $5 an hour. And I can't feed my kids. And I could feed my whole family for a year on the stuff that you throw away in your kitchen. So when you suddenly see these enormous salaries, I don't know why they don't say give them 10% of the company instead. Give them 1% of the company. Don't give them any money. Give them 1% of the company. This way they will have value in equity, but they certainly won't be coming out with these giant salaries. Every time we hear one of these Wall Street brokers get these tremendous bonuses, they're getting hated by somebody. Oh, those Wall Street types. Oh, those people with all that money. So leadership, we believe, if it is not, I don't mean hidden, but if it's not exploited and if it's somewhere kept back, becomes the most effective leadership, because there is such ambivalence about them. So instead of celebrating the emergence of great men, which we used to do, and we used to say, you know, oh, look at that guy, he's great. Look at that person. You know, I certain great men I've known in my life, and I've known some of them. I've met some of them. And I just thought they were great. I thought Ted Turner was great. You know, I thought a whole bunch of people that I've met were just great men. You know, great. And maybe they were manic, you know, like in the manic depressive syndrome, the manic ones sometimes are the greatest people. Maybe they were manic. Maybe they were crazy. But I have known some great, great men. But, you know, we don't admire great men anymore. Who do we admire? The guy who invented Macintosh, the guy who invented, you know, who do we admire? Who are our heroes? Who are the people who we look at? If we look at them, they wound up very rich and then we resent them. We used to have a society where we admired greatness and we saw greatness in our leaders. Think of a great president. You know, a great one. Who is a great president? You know, great. I mean, meaning that somebody who really was effective and didn't have any hidden agenda and wasn't screwing Marilyn Monroe off on the side. You know, who is your great? Who are your greatness? Who is the leader of heart? You know, was it Jimmy Peanuts? You know, was it that? Was it, you know, was it, who was it? Who's your great leader? Who did you look at and say, what a great man? What a great man. I was in a room once where Bill Clinton walked in a room. And this funny thing happened when Bill Clinton walked in a room. You could feel it a mile away. Something happened in the room which was not just quiet respect, but he had a presence, a greatness about him in this room. I don't know if Bill Clinton's a great man, but there's a greatness about him, and that it was possible that if he hadn't not messed up and if the world hadn't jumped all over him and if who knows what the political agenda was, it might have been greatness. Who are the greats? What are they? Are they all assassinated? Is that what happens to all the greats? So greatness in men has kind of disappeared. Greatness in men and women. It's kind of disappeared, you know? It's kind of disappeared. As soon as somebody gets so big as for us to consider them great, equally they are resented for their bigness. Oprah Winfrey, maybe great, maybe not great. She could give away cars. You know what I mean? Maybe great, maybe not great. Mixed feelings, almost everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. I wanted to know about your experience as a leader. And here's what I wanted to know about your experience as a leader. I want to know from you how you've led and how you failed to lead. What do you know about yourself that gets in the way of being an effective leader? Now, this is quite a question I'm asking you. What do you know about yourself that stops you from being an effective leader in your family, in your job, in your work? What do you know? Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900. We're talking about effective leadership, and we're talking about being effective in you and your effectiveness. Remember, if you do something that sets you apart from your group, it very often compromises your effectiveness as a group. That's why you see a lot of politicians, that's how you see a lot of people on television wearing jeans and T-shirts, you know, actors and actresses. They don't want to be set aside, you know, if they go on some kind of a program for an interview. They look like one of you. They don't want to be seen as too far removed from you. Do you ever wonder why are they wearing dirty jeans during interviews? Why do they wear T-shirts? Because they want to be one of you. They want to be you. You, and they want you to feel like you're one of them, and they have excelled from the crowd, and the crowd is you. Remember that social identity theory, that you are them, I am you. We are WBAI listeners. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
My name is Tama.
Hello, Tama.
And I take it that I can just speak from an experience where I was.
Yes, please,
in leadership.
Tama. Yes.
Well, I worked for a retail clothing company, and I had to interview people my own age and older than me to work in a store, a clothing store that had a lot of influence on the neighborhood, style, sense of style and everything, and New York City based. And I had to interview these kids who just wanted a summer job, but they were also intimidated by this image that the company portrayed. And every time I spoke to them, I acted like I wasn't even interviewing them for anything. I just wanted to give them a window of opportunity to, like, relate to me or just talk about themselves, you know? And I really felt this sense of not wanting to lead anybody because I never really truly trusted my own leaders.
Yes, yes. And where do you think that came from, where you never trusted your own leaders?
Well, I think everything kind of started with my parents.
Ah. I
came from really two different, really different parents. One was Japanese and one was English. And they were always completely differing on most subjects and fighting. They were very childish. I did deal with a lot of, like, parental warfare. And I always felt like an adult, like there was, like, a higher sort of objective onlooker behind me who was just kind of, like, numbing me from certain, you know, experiences and really building up a resistance to any of leaders who ever tried to guide.
So, Tama, let me ask you something. So, as a kid, did you feel like your parents were children?
Yeah.
Now, that's an important thing, you know. There's one of the very, very things there. Because if we're not entitled to anything, we are entitled to having parents who are not children. And when you see them acting like children with their incapacity to lead and their inability to make peace and their inability to be there for you, it crushes your heart and your ability to become a parent. I think one of the things that you do as a parent is you develop this parental model from what you see and what you see as a kid. If you grow up with parents who are dictators, you become a dictator. Mm-hmm. But if you as a parent, are you married, single, you're still?
No, I'm only 21. I'm in a relationship with a 31-year-old. We're like best friends. We're on the same level in a lot of ways.
But it's not a big romance.
It's a big romance, yeah.
It is a big romance. Good. So if you had children, how would you do it differently with them, Tama?
I just feel like I would never try to be, I can't even really imagine because I fantasize about having kids, and I think that because there are so many things my parents did wrong, I would just do so many things right. But at the same time, like, we're all one, and I'm totally, you know, going to draw off of my own experiences. But I think I'll just be very patient.
And so now patience would mean that when your children are doing something that's a little irritating, you, instead of reacting to them and controlling them, you would sit with them and be calm with them and wait with them till they get over it and be by their side. You would not be a dominating parent, but you would sit in their place and understand what they feel and give them what you never got, huh?
Yeah. And I would let them, you know, radiate with their, with just not feeling threatened, you know, by me, or just not feeling like I would like, you know, scream at them about something that had nothing to do with them because they were I was drunk or anything. I would never do that, you know?
Mm. You know, Tama, I think you're going to be a very fine mother.
Thank you.
I think you're going to be very fine. And thank you for calling with your contribution. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thank you. But Tama brings up another point. She says, you know, I think I want to be the other way, but I'm going to wind up being the same way because it's just like it's inside you somewhere. It's like genetically you wind up, how did I become the father I never wanted to be, you know, or I never wanted to even have? How did I become the mother that I never wanted to have? And somehow you wind up having to see that and fight it yourself. But, you know, generation after generation, if you're conscious, if you're aware of it, it changes. It actually changes right down to your genes. You know, I mean, it just, you begin evolving. You evolve, your family evolves, your kids evolve, your next kids evolve, because it takes consciousness. The very fact that you're listening to this program and learning about yourself. So this is what we're doing today. We are talking about leadership. Now, of course, we have a very big question here. What role does anger have in leadership? You know, what role does anger have in leadership? That's a question I want you to consider. Because what happens if you're a leader and you find out somebody steals from you? What happens if you're a leader and you find out somebody doesn't want to do what you tell them to do? What happens if you're a hothead and you can't control it? You know, what do? You hire somebody to give them the cartoon treatment? Cartoon. That's a reference from Godfather. What do? You threaten to take away their toys? What do? This is Armand with you with a positive mind. We're talking about this today. We're talking about leadership today because the issue of leadership is coming up as we get near the elections. Who is your leader? Who feels like you? You know, now you look at your candidates. Which one of those candidates feels like you? Name one that feels like he's a brother or sister or a near relative. Name one. McCain? You know, no. Hillary? No. Osama? Obama. Well, he's a leader too. Osama certainly is a leader out there. And, you know, and who is it that you identify with? Who is it that you feel is part of your family? Who have you ever felt was part of your family? Did you ever have a leader that you really loved and trusted? Did you have a leader that you loved and trusted and then wound up betraying you? Ouch. That's the bad news. You had that happen? You did? Yeah, imagine, you know what that's like when you have somebody who you actually just really trust. And it's not that they lie to you, but they actually betray you. That's quite a deal. We're going to talk about that when we get back. We're going to take a short break. Come back, I'm going to play you some very chipper music. I'm going to be playing you Bible music. Good stuff. And then I'll be back. Take a break.
Spirit, don't let nobody drag your spirit. say things that strange to you. I might preach the gospel, I believe it's true. I can't let nobody drag my spirit down.
Don't ever let anybody drag your spirit down. Eric Bibb, Rory Block, from an album called Blues Around the World. And it's a, it's quite a thing. Quite a thing. It's loaded. All kinds of good things, including a great slide blues. You like slides? You like slides? You like to dance slides? Great slide. This is Armand DeMille with you as part of my show. Why not? Here's 1 minute of a slide blues. This is what a slide blues sounds like.
Amaneció esta mañana y desperté cantando blues. Esta mañana y desperté cantando blues.
That's from Argentina. That's a Botafogo. It's called slide blues. I wonder if that's related to Botafogo. Is that something like that? Yeah. Well, Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. Blues are a very interesting thing. Could lead through music. Let me talking about leadership, in case you just tuned in thinking that we are just a gospel station. This is WBAI, the gospel of WBAI. We have a religion. Our religion, our group, it's an anti-war pacifist group. We believe that you can get more with less war. And that's just the way it is. And I don't know about you who are listening, because maybe you feel differently and you just tune in because you want to hear this wonderful show called The Positive Mind. But it is my stance and it is what I believe. And I believe that by understanding people, you make less war. And I think you could lead people into a less violent place by being less violent in your heart. And to be less violent in your heart, you have to love the people around you. Well, have to love the people around you. How have to? I mean, do we imagine that if you are somebody who is a cruel killer who goes out there and mercilessly takes people's lives or are responsible for the loss of many lives, do we figure maybe you have some problems with your father? You know? Yeah, you can put that together, put one and one together, and you can see it, you know, the leaders. I'd like to meet Cheney's family. I'd like to imagine, what was his dad like? You know? Probably find some story about his dad accidentally shooting somebody in the woods one day or something like that. Because you do tend to repeat that which you've seen. And if you've seen the secret violence of a father president, and you become the president, because there aren't many children who became presidents when their father, right after their fathers were presidents, but when you become a kid whose father was a violent president, even though we didn't see his violence, but clearly there was a lot of activity, what do you expect? What do you expect you're voting for? What do you expect you're going to get? It's hard to find a good leader. Where are the great people in this world? Where are the great men? Where are the great women? Where are they? Where are they and who would they lead? And would they even put themselves out there as leaders, or would they just join the crowd and be part of us and lead from within? You know, I think about Suzanne Ross, Dr. Suzanne Ross, who works with us here, who does so much activist stuff, and she works with so many rights and organizations, but she does it from within the organization. Suzanne does not carry the banner and say, follow me. She says, let's go. And she's one of the great people. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So we're talking about kind of leadership from within and leadership and what does it take. And now we're talking about the issue of anger. So what do you do if you're somebody who's filled with anger? Can you ever be a leader? Well, sure you can. You could chop heads the whole way. You could be a leader if you're some kind of a person who's out there who's saying, you know, do it my way or the highway, get out of here, a dominant personality, you know, sadomasochistic, sadistic kind of leader. Sure. Don't turn your back. Don't turn your back because somebody's going to get even. And somebody who says to you, oh, I am your willful follower, is the most likely one who's going to get you in the long run. 212-209-2900 is our number here. Anger is quite an important issue. What if you're filled with it? What if you're somebody who just feels resentment all the time and feels anger all the time? Well, I'm going to say something to you about it. If you are angry all the time, there's something wrong. Yes, that is not within the realm of normalcy. It is not normal to be of human mind, and human mind is angry all the time. If you go out and you're barking at people, and you're barking at bus drivers, and you're barking at people who serve you, and you're yelling at people, even if you're yelling in the name of justice, but if you're always angry, it means you're wounded. Because that's what wounded animals do. You know, you get an animal who gets wounded, boy, they get really angry. Because they're vulnerable. An angry person is a vulnerable person. It's a person who is hurt, who is trying to keep people away, and who is barking all the time. That's what angry people are. Angry people are people who are hurt. They're small, they're little, they're tiny, they're babies. And it hurts. So if you're an angry person, you want to take care of that anger. You want to get rid of that. You want to do something about it. Therein we have psychotherapy. Therein we have yoga. Therein we have meditation, there, and we have anything you could do to get that anger from being something that consumes you. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't be angry about injustices in your life and injustices that you may have had when you were little. Yes, but if that anger consumes you, if you are angry, if you are somebody who finds everything you're doing has got some, like if you're always drawing pictures of somebody killing somebody, or knives, or guns, or, you know, as you see many kids doing nowadays, cartoons and stuff like that. Get anger. That anger is going to poison you, and it's going to prevent you from being a leader, because anybody is going to sense it. 212-209-2900. Let's hear your story around your own leadership and your own aggression as it relates to leadership. And I want people who are listening to you to hear as if they are hearing from inside of you, if they could hear from the inside of your brain, because that's what I could do. I can listen to you. I could hear you. That's what I want to do. That's how I listen. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello there.
This is, my name is, Mohammed.
Hello, Mohammed.
How are you doing today? I'm good. I'm calling for me, this is an issue that brings a lot of complexity. I think all the conflicts in a person's life, come to the surface when you talk about than being a leader, because then you have to resolve all these conflicts within you, at least try to or look at them, or at least acknowledge they exist. Because I one of my personal issues with it, with leadership is, you know, if some people view me as a leader, you know, in my family or in also in social settings, and people think, okay, well, this person is a leader, and I've always been reluctant to look at myself as a leader. So in a way, this call in itself is kind of, you know, interesting that I would actually call thinking of myself as a leader, because I never really, I didn't really accept it. I think, first of all, a leader, I think, is someone people have to choose. I think someone who nominates themselves isn't really a leader. You know, they could be, you know, a manipulative person or whatever, but they're not really a leader, because a leader is someone who serves people. You're taking care of your people. So in a way, there is some kind of a self-sacrifice in the process, in my opinion, of truly being a leader, because you're adopting other people's agendas. It's not just yours. To me, that's a part of the definition of being a
leader. So you see leadership as kind of an entrapment.
I think it is.
So you see being a non-leader as being a freedom.
Absolutely.
You know?
I think you are free to make mistakes, but you pursue your own course, you know, at any time you choose to. You know, to me, when you are a leader, it's a responsibility, and it's a true heavy burden, in my opinion. It's something that I think you to be a truly good leader, you really, for example, the issue of anger, along with other personal needs or interests, it has to be put in the back burner. Now, you could challenge, you could work it out, you can do whatever with it, but it cannot come to the forefront in dealing with other people's issues. And I think that's one of the problems that I see, that a lot of the leaders, in a way, almost a person I would think of as a leader almost have to have somewhat of a spiritual kind of approach to the whole process, instead of this economical philosophy of, monetary or quantitative type of leadership. Like, okay, well,
I understand. Muhammad, let me ask you a question. Can you imagine a leader who got up there and said, I make mistakes. Yes, that was a mistake I made. Sure, I made that mistake. I make this mistake. Yeah, I tried that. It didn't work. So I tried something else. And when I think of some of the leaders that I know, especially the high-tech leaders, the leaders who are in the computer businesses, who are just like, you know, they were part of a family. They grew up a family together. You know, they grew up this family of building a computer or building some software together. And they kind of worked together, and so that nobody really... Maybe one person stood out as the person who became the leader, but they make mistakes. See, I think what you're saying, the kind of leader that you're talking about, yes, may be a leader who is never allows themselves to make mistakes, like most of our politicians are seen as leaders. But the kind of person I'm looking for is the one who makes mistakes. I want the one who makes mistakes, knows he makes mistakes, admits he makes mistakes, and he's right 99 out of 100 times. I'm okay with that guy. Gets my respect.
The leader I'm looking for isn't someone who doesn't make mistakes. What I'm saying, what I said earlier, is that the leader within himself should try not to use or not to cloud his judgment. He's going to make mistakes, and to me that's absolutely a part of the process. I am saying, to the contrary, that you make mistakes, you acknowledge mistakes and all of this, but I'm talking about the intention of manipulating the circumstances to your benefit. To me, that's what the leader is a servant. So I think someone who's leading is exactly the same as you're thinking of, someone who is part of the group. The group kind of tell them, okay, well, we rather you, and so on.
I understand, and I agree with you.
I don't want him to be perfect. I think, to the contrary, a leader who comes across and says, I am perfect, is the worst leader, because that leader is going to have no compassion for other people, because that leader is going to come in and try to hold everyone else to a standard that's not real, because the person himself is lying.
Very intelligent. Very, very well said, Muhammad. Thank you so much for your contribution. Thank you. Thank you. They were talking about leaders that emerge out of groups. They took a group of prisoners, right? They took some people, psychologists. They had one group enter the group of prisoners, and the other one entered the group of guards. So they wanted to see which ones and how leaders emerged. Well, we're talking about social identity. Prisoners have a social identity in a prison. They all feel like they're part of a crowd. You know, we're all in this together. Prisoners. Guards, however, don't have an identity. They don't feel like they're all in it together. Guards are very individual. Guards are very separate. There is no guards club. They don't go to the guards bar. You know, guards have a different kind of mentality. They're kind of separate. They do their job. They go home. So there was a leader that emerged out of the prisoners, but no leader ever emerged out of the guards. just the titular leader, the one who is there for the longest period of time. But it's kind of interesting. If you don't have your group that you really identify with and you're not part of a group, you're not going to have a leader emerge from it. And nowadays, unfortunately, we have a society where we have so many people are just working for themselves and being separate, and they are not together. Now, New York City, I'll talk about New York City. After 9/11, New York City people became very, very friendly. They were much more in it together. We see people in the city who are much more supportive of each other. But in other parts, I said I see about New York City, but in other parts of the world as I see it, people separated around this whole issue of the war, and they separated and they became a little more individual, and they were not as close together, and the group identities began to suffer. And with that, when you don't have people who feel like they are part of something, and they're not part of something, they're out of that, they can't emerge as their own leaders. And the funny thing is, when you feel like you're somebody who separates yourself out, you can't really be a leader for your children. Because all you are, you know, for your children is you're now a paranoid leader. You're saying to your kids, it's us and only us, and we got to protect ourselves, and don't tell people how much money we earn, and don't let people know how good it is, and don't tell this, and stay away from that person, and stay away from that person. And by doing that, what kind of a leader do you become to your children? A frightened leader. And that yields frightened children. So true leadership is one where you're not afraid, you're not angry, you're loving, and you can actually see the other person's point of view from within, from the inside. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I like your program a great deal. I learn very much from it. But I wonder that you haven't touched upon the idea that if we encourage people to be leaders, because as Eric Fromm said, most of us are sort of seduced into thinking that the decisions are too hard for us to make, then we never get a chance to become our own leaders. I have a very anti-authoritarian personality. I'm 72 years old, and I recognize it. So but I like to work with groups. Working alone is pretty futile. But when I get into groups and people either they've been elected or they appoint themselves as leaders, without encouraging other people to take a turn at being a leader, because that's the only way you can learn, is by putting your point of view out and seeing if people will accept it, and if not, why not? In other words, to encourage everyone to become their own leaders, maybe that would be a really good way to lead.
Well, you know, I there's something about what you're saying that I really like, because it reminds me of, what's your first name?
Irene.
Irene, you know, it reminds me of this thing that we used to do when we played chess when I was a kid. We had a chess club, and what we would do is we would play chess, and then after 10 minutes, we'd have to switch roles, that we'd have to switch positions. Now, the idea of it is to always look from the other person's position, and then after 10 more minutes, you'd have to go to another game and pick up somebody else's game. And it was all the idea that you could see it from all these different perspectives, and that the leadership that emerged out of that was somebody who had the capacity to see everything, to see all the variations. So you're proposing a very interesting form of leadership.
Which I don't get smart because of me. I get smart because of the things I hear on BAI and the things I read. I'm very, very influenced by Alice Miller's books. And
sure, so am I.
Good. And to me, it just seems a logical extension. Societies need to stop bringing up children to respect authorities and leaders, but to instead instill in them the sense that everybody's their own leader. And you don't get to do that if you're constantly listening to somebody. Even if they're not being authoritarian, if they come up with all the ideas, if they have the microphone, if they have the column, and never allow anyone else access to the podium or the... then people don't get to develop their ideas. They don't think they know how because they've never given, allowed a chance to do that. I've noticed that people who have a microphone or a forum are very reluctant to share it. Well, how are they going to expect people to carry on when they're either too busy or too involved with their own egomaniacal presentations? You know what I mean? Even in families, people don't have to be told what to do.
Well, Irene, let me ask you something. You're 72 years old, and you're very wise, and you're very aware of things like the drama of the gifted child, and you're aware of Eric Fromm.
I could hear
that you could probably, you know, you have a tremendous information. Why is it that you still have this automatic reaction to anybody who's in an authority
position?
No,
it's not totally automatic. I just don't like being told what to do. For instance,
Irene, do you like me?
I do.
Okay, you know, I like you too. Now, would you do me a favor? If I were to tell you, would you raise your right hand? Would you do it for me?
Sure, sure.
Okay, so raise your right hand.
I'm doing it.
Okay, now could you lower your hand? Now tell me to do something.
Take another call.
Oh, I can't because I'm out of time. I wish I could. But, you know, if you see, the point of it is when there's love there, somebody can tell you what to do. And you say, sure.
But, you know, not everybody, people pretend to love each other, or they use the word love to cover,
right, okay.
To cover so many things that it's almost become useless.
Yeah,
I
understand
your car,
completely.
You love your cat.
You love a hamburger, right?
Yeah.
Irene, thank you for calling in. One day I'd like to have you on air as my guest. I'd like to have you here in the studio. There's something about you that just touches me right. Would you get in touch with me? You know, write me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. Let's share the microphone with you.
I'll send you a card. I don't type. I'm not going to have a gravestone, but if I were to have a gravestone, it would say, she never learned to type.
I understand.
I still prefer face-to-face or letters or phone calls. Those machines dehumanize us.
Give me a call. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Irene, thank you so much for being there. And to all the rest of you at WBAI, my special thanks. I want to, if you want a copy of today's program, you could call 212-757-4488. Or, hey, Priya. Priya is leaving us today, huh? Special thanks to Priya for having joined us for this summer. She has been an amazing volunteer and wonderful, wonderful contribution to a lot of the services we offer and the people out there. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.
Let's just baby, well.